Hello, I'm Rich Kilgariff. Welcome to Bokomi, Getting Smarter, Faster, Together, with new non-fiction books full of original, memorable insights. Omi, from the most wanted minds in business, science, technology, and culture. In this episode...
Hi there, I'm Susie Pearl, author of The Art of Creativity, and this is my Omi for Bokomi.
We meet the PR guru and celebrity manager turned psychologist, writer and coach who wants us all to unleash the creative artist lurking inside our mind and body.
This is going to be something that we really need to look at in terms of education, of how we're teaching our children. It's no longer about learning a load of facts that anyone could Google in one moment on the internet. That's of no value to anyone. We all have way too much information and data. What is valuable is innovation and creative thinking. And this is the currency of the future in the workplace.
Susie Pearl lives and breathes her work. Having recently survived cancer, she writes from the heart and soul of someone who appreciates the value of creative expression.
I lost all fear, Richard. I had no fear. I wasn't afraid of living. I wasn't afraid of dying. It's like fear disappeared and I couldn't access it.
In her book, The Art of Creativity, 7 Powerful Habits to Unlock Your Full Potential, she builds upon her own vast experience and personal network to connect you to your own stream of creativity and ultimately your happiness. Susie, welcome to Bokomi.
Hi, Richard. Lovely to talk to you again.
It's so nice to start an introduction with the word happiness.
Yeah. It's really important. You know, we all need a lot more of that.
We do. And you've been a source of happiness for me for quite a while. So are you feeling happy today?
Yeah, I am actually. Yeah, I really am.
Good job as well, isn't it? If you said you were really down and depressed, I'd have got off to the right start there. Phew, maybe I should have checked that first. But anyway, good, we're on a roll. So we like to ask our authors and our guests to share two or three insights that they gained in the writing of their book. What were yours? Because I know you're very into process and you understand process. So what were your insights with The Art of Creativity?
Well, I didn't really know what I was getting into when I pitched the book and got a book deal. And then I got really ill. You know, I was told I had a big brain tumor and I was unlikely to live past 6 weeks. So that was a sort of shock in the middle of the writing. I was like, wow. And I'm sure my publisher thought, I will never see this book. So the fact that now the book is out, coming out, I feel like we can all go, wow, that was quite something. So I think one of the insights was, as I was writing it, I felt lucky to be alive. It's something as basic as that. And what happened is after I got well, against all predictions, I came out of it with full remission. And I felt huge gratitude. So on my daily routine, I'm a big fan of daily routines. My daily routine was showing up to write every day. And I did so feeling grateful to be able to do that, just to be here to write. So that was one thing that really peaked for me, was gratitude. And I wanted to put the energy in the book of simple abundance and gratitude from having had this sort of near-death experience, and then follow that up by writing a book. And the subject itself, that's the second thing. The subject of creativity, I didn't know what I was going to find when I started really digging into it. What I found was that creativity is a savior for human beings. And I think we've all recognized that in lockdown, it's something that many people have leaned into in times of stress, in times of anxiety, in times of chaos. Creativity is something that comes out of human beings almost naturally. And it connects us to our inner life force in quite a remarkable way. And it's a big healer as well.
So you've been on a bit of a journey. You set off on a journey. You weren't quite sure where it was taking you. And then a big obstacle.
Yeah, this juggernaut.
But you found it in...
It was a juggernaut and it came around the corner so fast, I didn't even see it coming. This is a person who I didn't drink, didn't take drugs, lived a great life, very vibrant, you know, I was in business, doing really well. But I wouldn't have been on your list of like, oh, she's going to get something like this. You know, I was eating really healthy. Everything I was doing correctly. And then I get this. And I was really surprised, I must say. Yeah.
Does it change your view of yourself then? Did you actually have to go through a little bit of a self-analysis in who you were, because if you change your view of yourself, and I know you understand how people tick and you think a lot about it as a coach, and you help people look at themselves in a very objective way as well as a very personal way. Did you have to do that for yourself?
Yeah, it wasn't just a little bit. I have a brand new operating software, it feels like. I'm coming out the world completely differently to how I was pre-illness. I see things differently. I feel things differently. I sense things differently. And I really, you know, the gurus talk about live in the moment, be in the now. Don't live in the past. Don't live in the future. Show up here. This is all there is. And that little concept of be present has fundamentally changed everything for me, and I am really present. I don't hang out in the past too much, if at all. But also my memory is gone, which is fantastic. I can't remember all the people I was really mad about or the horrible things they did to me. That must have happened, but I can't remember it.
So I wonder why you accepted this invitation to be on the podcast. I was quite surprised. I thought, oh, she's over it. No.
Yeah, she must
have. I won't remind her. No.
It is refreshing. It's like having a cleanup of your hard drive when all the files are kind of erased and you start again. I can remember some stuff, but a lot of things have gone, and it makes it easier for me to live my life being present, actually.
Well, you have been, I mean, you've talking to the past, you mean you've been around some incredibly creative people in your career to date, and you still are. And you interviewed the likes of David Lynch and Russell Brand for the book.
Yeah.
And Paul McCartney, if you want to drop a Beatle in there.
Yeah, I'll drop a Beatle.
Do they work on their creativity, or does it just come naturally to them?
That's an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, I think every one of us, one thing I discovered is every one of us has got creativity within. And I think that these guys know how to tap in to that stream. One interesting story that Paul McCartney told me was when he was out in India with Maharishi, they were learning transcendental meditation at the time. And during that period in India, he would go to sleep, have a dream, wake up, and he had one of his greatest songs fully formed in his head. And he just leant over, got a piece of paper and wrote it down. And they were the most prolific they've ever been during that time when they were doing this TM with Maharishi. And for me, it's like you're tapping into a well that exists in all of us. And also another thing that comes out in when I was talking to a lot of very creative people, they talk about ideas going by, and it's almost like Katie Tunstall talked about this. She jumps up and reaches up and grabs it and pulls that idea down. Elizabeth Gilbert talks about the same phenomenon in Big Magic. So it's almost like ideas are floating in the ether and we have to go and rescue them and bring them in and decide, are we going to move on that or not? So for example, when you meditate, a lot of people, including myself, I get great ideas when I meditate. I have to write them down though, because they disappear. You know, you forget them, particularly me with my memory. But if you jot down things, it's really then the creativity is around what you do with these ideas. There are no new ideas. What is new is how we link together concepts and the innovative way that people can sew together ideas and make them fresh and new. And that's what all the great innovators have done. Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, all these people you look at, that they will speak about the fact that, you know, there aren't really new ideas. The newness is how we put it together.
You must have overcome to apply what you know in this new way, in this new book, The Art of Creativity. You must have overcome, apart from the immediate fear of dying, you must have overcome fears to write this book. And you talk about fear in the book as a block to creativity, that we're born with two fears, the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. So is fear the biggest block, would you say? Would you say that's the single biggest block to creativity?
Well, yeah, it's certainly one of the big blocks. I open the book talking about fears and blocks and tell you how to get rid of them. I spent a career learning this in mind technology of how you clear blocks and clear belief systems so that you're good to go forwards. So I open the book with this because I figure that you have to deal with that to get past it in order to find this well of creativity inside yourself. So I felt it was a good place to start. And we have amazing techniques now for clearing blocks. And I really use the mind like the analogy of a computer. You know, we have clean my disk programs where you have a defragmentation or a cleanup of your files. It's the same with your brain. You know, sometimes we have programs and belief systems running that just are not helpful. and hold us back and send us into fear. Procrastination, for example, something that a lot of people have, that's really about fear of getting the job done. You're holding back, holding back, holding back. I don't think procrastinators are lazy. I think they're fearful. You know, they're worried. They're like, oh, if I start doing it, I might get it wrong. I don't really know how to do it. I'm not quite ready yet. I haven't got the skills yet. I haven't got the tools yet, or whatever. This is about fear of getting started. And one thing that happened to me when I got ill, I lost all fear, Richard. I had no fear. I wasn't afraid of living. I wasn't afraid of dying. It's like fear disappeared and I couldn't access it. So I began to write from a process and a place of having no fear. And I didn't really care. I didn't care about anything at the time. When I was in hospital, I was just like free of fears, free of worries, free of caring too much about my fears. I just didn't attend to them. It wasn't on my list. It wasn't on my radar. So I address it early in the book. I talk about affirmations and I give people some very practical tools for how to clear fears. And as a coach, one thing I've found is that if just about everybody I have ever coached over 20 years all come somehow with a bundle of fears. Sometimes they're very prominent and really get in the way of life. Other ones are tucked away in the sidelines and perhaps just stop you doing fun things. For example, some people have social anxiety and they feel very concerned if they're in a social place. Who do I talk to? Is everyone looking at me? What do I say? Am I going to make a fool of myself? All of these sorts of things. The good news, so a lot of people suffer from fear that is debilitating. The good news is that we have amazing methods that we know about now of how to cure that and sort that and dissolve that. And I speak about this in the book with practical tools.
In Stephen King's book on writing, I don't know if you've read it, he warns against the romantic notion of a writer's desk looking out on a beautiful scene. Mm. In fact, he said he did his best writing in like a cubbyhole under the stairs. Mm. But you live in Ibiza, that's where you are now, which I imagine is lovely. Mm. How important, though, is environment to creativity?
Mm-hmm. Right. I think it's very important because as a writer, you're dealing with frequency. You're writing in a frequency. And I believe that creative art of any sort, whether you're singing, dancing, drawing, painting, making music, whatever, you're in a particular frequency. Your brainwave is in a particular frequency. Now, our brainwaves move through all the different frequencies, alpha, beta, theta, gamma, all of these things. We go through it all during the day, different brainwave states. Certain brainwave states are way more useful for creativity than others. Some brainwave states put us into a daydream and make us all and floaty. Others focus, high performance, sharp, this kind of thing. So they all have their value at different times. And where you are, your environment very much influences the kind of brainwave state you hang out in. So for example, if you and I were to go for a walk on a beach and look at some sea and breathe in some beautiful fresh air, we'd probably feel pretty good. Even if we had some shitty stuff going on in our lives, we'd perhaps forget it for the moment and feel good while we're walking along on a beach. And that's because of the environment being nice. Or we could go for a walk in nature, go in the trees, be out in nature around flowers and little squirrels running by. We'd probably feel pretty good there as well. So this is all affecting our ability to think well and create well and imagine well. These are all the components of being able to tap into creativity. So I like to make my working area practical. I like to have my tools. I like a big screen. I like a quiet place to work, which isn't interrupted. And yeah, I like to have a nice view. For me, that helps. But I could also write in a cupboard if I had to. I just don't want to.
I just don't want to write in a cupboard. That's fine.
I don't want to.
The end of it all, yeah. I'd rather like look at
I want to have nice things around me. And smells as well, you know, activating all the senses. Have some good smells, have some good things to look at, think good thoughts. All of these things are important. It's curating the whole environment on every sense.
I suppose apart from things like Mein Kampf, nobody ever wrote a good book angry.
No. Well, anger's a very low frequency, emotion. When you get angry, you start attracting all sorts of horrible things in, more horrible things. And it doesn't set you up for anything pleasurable at all. And I'm, you know, I live in Ibiza. I'm a bit of a hedonist. I like being happy. I like having fun. I like having joy and harmony in a good time. And so for me, it's important not to carry around negative feelings like anger or jealousy or grief and all of these things, because one, it doesn't make you feel good. Two, it's really bad for you on a health level. You know, it does not help you feel well.
I wasn't suggesting for a moment that Mein Kampf was a good book, by the way. Using it as an example of a book that got written in anger. Yeah. Anyway, that aside, the warmth and the spirituality of the book just flows through the pages. But there's, as I said, there's some very practical things. And I particularly like the section on mind mapping, which you demonstrate very clearly based on the mind mapping of a book project. So what is a mind map for the listener, and how do I apply it to a creative project?
Well, for every creative project I do, especially one like, for example, writing a book, which is quite structural. You know, you have to have an idea, write chapters, get it written, blah, blah, blah. There's lots of processes and layers to it. Start with creating a mind map, which is literally a map to take you on the road and give you a route to achieving and getting somewhere. And once you look at the macro view of a project, rather than just diving in and trying to write a book from page one and not really knowing where you're going or how it's going to be structured, you're likely to get really lost. And you're not going to have perspective on what is the big picture here. So what I love to do, so let's use writing a book as an example. You get a big piece of paper and you put your central idea, my new book, for example, in the center. And then you start loading up with just one word of ideas. This is maybe things you want to cover in the book, topics, themes, it could be tone of voice, anything connected with your project, you put it down. And for me, when you have a mind map, it really gives you very clear direction about where you're headed in the big picture. So if I'm on chapter four of a book, I know what's going to be coming up because I've mind mapped it. And in the book I took about the rules of mind mapping and how to do it, it's a brilliant thing. There's some really good software out there to do it. And what I find is it's a great activator of ideas. I might not have thought, unless I'm doing a mind map and sitting down writing a mind map, I might not have thought of half of the ideas that I get if I do sit down and give myself the space to actually write down ideas around a project. It's very, very useful. You can use it in business. You can use it for home projects. You can use it for anything, how you want to run your life. You know, I'm all about designing your life. That's what I do as a coach. I get people to design their lives and look with a critique at how their life is. What do you want to do? What do you want to do more of? What do you want to do less of? And so to mind map your life is a really fun thing to do and gets you very clear on what your priorities are.
And one of the many tips in the book is to create diverse connections between yourself and other people in other fields and industries. Does that include people of different ages? And is age a barrier to creativity, but both being too young maybe to have enough life experience or too old to have fresh ideas?
If I'm doing a big creative project, I want people of all kinds on my team. I want young ones who've got are not held back by conventions or we've always done it this way points of view. They come at it with energy, enthusiasm, and a new paradigm for doing things. They're full of great ideas. I always want a young one on the team and someone with experience at the other end. I want different nationalities, different points of view, different experiences, different ages, different languages, different cultures. All of these people can bring amazing new perspectives on things. And it's really that gives it the color and the depth when you start brainstorming. There's no point in having people who all think the same in one place. You're not really going to come up with anything new or that interesting. You put together a group of very unusual and different kinds of people, you're going to get some real interesting stuff popping out.
And looking to the future, with millions of jobs being made redundant by machines and by COVID, I mean, there's going to be a real job problem coming up, an employment problem
or opportunity,
which is kind of what I was going to say. How will creativity be valued by employers and consumers in the future? Is it going to be a soft skill that we really don't need, or is it going to be more valuable?
Well, my book, the final chapter is called Future Gazing, and I look at the future. I look at the future of work, the future of how we deal with each other, and the future of the planet. And for me, this is a very interesting area. For sure, creativity is going to be valued more highly than other skills. With artificial intelligence coming in, this will take away a lot of current jobs, repetitive jobs. It's easy to program repetition into AI. However, what isn't available with robots and AI is imagination and the power we have of creativity as human beings. So what's going to happen, I believe, in the workforce going forwards is that there's going to be an enormous need for highly creative people who are good with putting together ideas in different ways. And this is going to be something that we really need to look at in terms of education, of how we're teaching our children. It's no longer about learning a load of facts that anyone could Google in one moment on the internet. That's of no value to anyone. We all have way too much information and data. What is valuable is innovation and creative thinking. And this is the currency of the future in the workplace.
Well, Susie, we've skimmed a stone across the lake of wisdom and advice in the book. Well, I hope that's given people an idea of what they can get just by spending a bit of time in your company and in your book and with your mind. Thanks for sharing your OMI with Bookomi today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And I hope that people enjoy reading the book. There's going to be audios that go with it that take you into a meditation brainwave state to get into creativity. And the book's really practical. It gives you exercises to do that will really change your world, change your life, and change your viewpoint and your approach, hopefully, to life. And post-COVID, I think we all need a bit of that.
I was actually going to say just that about the book. So thank you for doing it. Susie's book, The Art of Creativity, 7 Powerful Habits to Unlock Your Full Potential, is available to buy now. Just follow the link in the description of the podcast. And if you'd like to be the first to hear and meet the brightest minds behind the smartest new nonfiction before anyone else, sign up to our most wanted emails at bookomi.com. Soon members will be able to take part in the podcast recordings. Meanwhile, if you enjoyed this Bookomi pod, please let us know by following or subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Rich Kilgariff. Stay safe and remember, the longest journey can begin with the shortest step forward. Bye for now.